Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And today, my guest is the global marketing manager for Raputa Robotics, Alicia Lobo.
Welcome, thanks, Alicia. Dave. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. Excited to have you. If you could you just start by telling everyone about Raputa Robotics and what you're up to these days?
Sure. So we're a Japanese robotics company, and we are, I would say, more of a cloud robotics company, but we play a lot in the warehouse automation space. So having already conquered the Japanese market, we're now here entering the United States, and we're excited to be here. Part of my job is to educate and talk to people a lot about what we do at Raputa and why we're different. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, excellent. So Raputa, I was doing a little research on the company, and one of the first things I noticed is they seem very different in terms of their philosophy and their culture compared to how many other American companies are set up. But one thing that really struck me as interesting is just their six core principles, with the empathy, openness, first principles, simplicity, drive, and fearlessness. Fearlessness, in particular, they say, we take big and calculated risks without agonizing to create an environment that's safe to fail. We speak up with things that are inconsistent with our core values. So with being with a company that makes it safe to fail and takes big risks, what is that like?
I got to say, first of all, you're one step ahead of me, because I was actually going to reference the core principles, and I'm glad you already looked that up and you read it. I think for me, the difference between working at Raputa and working at any other organizations that I have before is that some of these core values, all of them actually, are not only applicable to the people like us who work at Raputa, but I think to our end customers as well. So when you talk about fearlessness, we will go in, we will understand a problem that a customer has. And in the spirit of empathy and openness, if this is something that we can do, then we tend to avoid it. But if it is something that we can think out of the box, maybe come back to the customer with an innovative solution, we're not afraid to take those risks. And I for the most part, we don't fail, but it's good to take that risk. I love having internally an engineering teams that are always thinking outside the box, that are always trying to see how we can push the envelope on technology. When it comes to simplicity and first principles, I love the fact that we always break things down to what is the core problem, right? What is a single one pain point that you as an end customer or we as an engineering team are aiming to solve? So you keep your focus on the exact same one problem, and you just stay laser focused on that. I think for us, that has worked immensely. And then the empathy and openness, I think it's part of the Japanese culture, and then it's also part of the culture of the company. And I love the fact that we have sat down, we have understood with clients, none of the features on the robots that you see that we build actually come from the fact that we think that this is important, or that this should be a feature that, you know, robots should have. It has come from spending hours and hours inside warehouses. We thank our key clients who have allowed us to literally almost build inside their warehouses, come back to us with very specific problems, a lot of feedback. And we've taken that, we've incorporated that. And that's the product that you see. We're constantly evolving only on the basis of what our clients share back with us, whether it's pain points, it's feedback, or just like overall, maybe something different that they've seen on the technology side.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to learn and grow, for sure. Now, you were also telling me an interesting story how Raputa, of course, they're a cloud robotics company, but they started off as a drone company?
That is right. We actually spun out of ETH Zurich, if you know ETH Zurich, out of Switzerland. So counts Albert Einstein, actually, both as an alum and then later as a professor. So ETH Zurich has given birth to a lot of great, minds. And I think one of them happened to be Dr. Gajan Mohanraja, He did his PhD at ETH Zurich. He was part of the Kiva Systems project. But if you actually look up Dr. Gajan on YouTube, he has the very famous Kubli video, which I think has clocked over 14 million views. And the idea was, again, to build the internet for robots, right? Like if you see my background, it talks a lot about machines talking to each other. The red dots are, machines that are actually connecting with each other. It's almost like your nervous system, right? And over time, so we actually started off as a drone company because we believed that there was a lot that could be explored in that space. Eventually, when we moved out to Japan, unfortunately, due to some political reasons, there had to be a ban on drones. And we pivoted to bring some of that technology down into the warehousing space. I think it's probably the only company that I know of personally that has pivoted due to like a political issue and then come out with a completely brand new product that, and we were so quick to go to market with it.
Wow. Yeah, that reminds me of the quote, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Exactly. So the next question was like, okay, so now we can't fly drones and we can't do what we were thinking of doing with the drones. What can we do with that same technology, but now we bring it on the ground? And if you want to have like feet inside the warehouses, right? You want to have, think of it like feet on street. So feet on street is the robots definitely being inside the warehouse. So very similar technology about robots handing off to each other. And what we were doing with the drones, some of that, those same principles are down with our warehouse robots. That is, we hold one of the patents on multi-robot route planning, which means the robots communicate between themselves and they also figure out the route, autonomously plan their own routes within the warehouse.
Okay.
So we're not too far, and this is what I try to explain to a lot of people, right? I think the beauty about working for a robotics company is that you get to play on both sides of the fence. You get to use a bit of software and a bit of hardware, right? And when you and I were chatting earlier, I was telling you, I believe that hardware is great, and we're leaders in that space. Obviously, having come from Japan, Japan has a reputation that precedes itself in terms of the kind of hardware that comes out of it, right? You've got some of the biggest names like Sony, et cetera, that we know so well, that make beautiful hardware. But in our case, the hardware is merely an extension of what we do on the software side.
Okay. Another thing too that I really I liked about what I read on the website and kind of struck me about the company is, we hear heard so much over the years, at least here in the US that I've noticed, almost like a negative connotation of robotics, meaning, oh, they're going to take away the jobs, and almost like it's a bad thing. And one of the like the statements, let me read it from your site, is we automate 3D jobs, dirty, dangerous, difficult. We'll create a society where people can challenge themselves with more creative work and intellectual work. So what, like, talk about that mindset in terms of like that's it's actually like an evolution and freeing up time and resources for humans to work on higher value tasks.
Exactly. I think you've literally nailed it with one statement. But if I had to go a little bit more into that, I always like to use the analogy of ATMs, right? So when ATMs first came out, people thought bank tellers were going to lose their jobs. Like, oh no. Take the evolution of a calculator, the evolution of our laptops when Excel sheets came out, and people had to move from, back in the day, writing all their accounts and audits in books to today, you're doing it in platforms and on apps. Right, we never imagined that that progression would happen. But did those people lose their jobs? They didn't. They went on to do better and higher intellectual works. What an ATM does is it takes away the repetitive or the dull job of dispensing money. So today, if I want, I can just go walk to an ATM, take out whatever money I want without having to stand hours in line in a bank and waste a teller's time also having to give me dispense that money. Instead, today, banks are able to educate more people on why financial literacy is important, for example, right? Bring more people into the fold. Now, the fact that you can put ATMs in different parts of the country and people can just go and now have more access to digital transactions, right? So even if, say, with the introduction of an Apple Pay or any of these, it's only a natural progression. So for me as well, I believe with robots, for a long time, people have been needed to do certain tasks, which, well, Dave, let's face it, you and I are the lucky ones who don't have to work such heavy jobs, right? We don't have to play in the blue gig economy, the blue collar worker space. We don't. But we know that it's not a great space to be in. Those jobs can get boring. They can get very dull. They can get very dangerous. They can be bad for your ergonomics, health, etc. Why do humans need to have to do that? You know, so we are trying to build robots that can work alongside humans. I don't think that they replace humans. So, very specifically for our company, I can say inside a warehouse, I have seen, warehouse pickers pull carts, which are maybe 60, 70 pounds, you know, and you start your 8-hour shift and you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and you're like, okay, let's go, you know, I'm ready to go. But by the end of that shift, you are tired. You've been pulling this for the longest time. You have to walk. I know that, like, sometimes just carrying my own groceries and I'm walking like a couple of miles in a day, and if I'm done with the end of the day, I'm exhausted. Like, it's really tiring. So our robots basically just move inside the warehouse. You don't have to be paired with a robot. One robot tells you where to go next, so you have very intentional walking. You know that wherever you're going next, there isn't going to be a robot waiting there for you to come and pick on it. So that takes away the pulling. That makes it a lot more fun. That gives them a little bit of flexibility to even take a break. But yes, like you said, I mean, humans are meant to do far more intellectual things in life, like write poetry and you know, draw art and invent things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I was reading your LinkedIn profile and I noticed you have a master's in English literature. But you're also a robotics cheerleader. So how and you've been in robotics for a long, long time. So like how did you get into robotics?
Promise me you'll send me this section to send it to my mom, because she's always asking me this question. Like, whenever I go home, she's like, yeah, so how did my daughter go from a master's degree English to like talking about robots and LiDAR and SLAM and all of these things? Like, this perplexes her. But God bless her, she's amazing and very supportive. I've been lucky to have extremely supportive parents. So I actually have a backstory, which is I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and then my dad runs a car workshop back home. And for me, I've always been a nuts and bolts person, right? A complete grease monkey. Followed my dad around into the workshop, like sat down, understood how cars move. And for me, that fascination, there were so many different tiny moving parts that we take for granted. When you sit in a car and you put your key into the ignition, or well, today it's push to start, and you slam the door and you strap in your seatbelt, all of those little parts have come from so many different places. So many different hands have made it or manufactured it, and today you have machines that manufacture it, assemble it, and we just take a lot of things for granted when we sit there. But that symphony and that orchestration of how all of these parts move together to get you from point A to point B just fascinated me as a child. I was then fortunate. I worked for the likes of Mars Group, selling dog food, to Microsoft, selling audio and Link back in the day. If you remember, good old Microsoft Link, I worked on that. And well, fast forward to getting an opportunity to work for Universal Robots. I think that blew my mind. That was an amazing gig that I had with Universal Robots, having been able to be upfront and understand from a founder's perspective how robots and humans could work together, how machines and humans could work together. I think the closest we see humans and machines working together is when we operate them or when we drive a car. But when you go inside industrial settings, it was a lot more dangerous to be around some of these bigger machines. So that the fact that he thought of that and said, okay, how can I make this a lot more safer for humans to be around? So that, you know, really caught my fascination, and I've been embedded in robotics ever since. I think it's my t-shirt actually right now, and at the end of the podcast I can show it to you, it says robot doctor. And I like to call myself, I without having a degree, I've been able to do some pretty cool stuff with robots. I've served wine to the Princess of Denmark with a robot. So I've done some cool stuff and some out of the box thinking, because I believe eventually robots will come into our everyday life. For now, we see them in an industrial setting, but they're slowly coming into our everyday lives. So I'm excited for what the future holds for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed you wearing that t-shirt before where it says I build robots.
Yes, I should have got that one on actually today, but I have a robot doctor which I can show you at the end. So people ask me a lot about that as well. I was like, well, I'm just the person that comes in, I diagnose what a pain point is, and then I can tell you what the robots can do for you. So it's more of a fun thing. But yes, I do have a t-shirt right now that says robot doctor, that's on.
Okay. Yeah, and you also sent me that video too of a restaurant in Chicago, and I looked it up. It's called X-Spot, where
The yeah.
they have the robot waiters.
Surprisingly, I'm going to tell you a fun story that happened right here. So I look up restaurants. I was really hungry when I got back to Chicago, and I was like, I just looked up a restaurant that I could just go walk, maybe pick up some food and go walking around and finish some errands. And I get to this thing, which was just like sliding doors, and it said, didn't look like a restaurant to me. It just looked like a counter inside. So I walked in and I said, hey, I actually am looking for this X restaurant. And they were like, oh, yeah. I mean, there was just one human being there. She said, oh, yeah, you got to place an order and it'll come out to you. And I was like, okay. So I go to this massive kiosk, place my order, and I'm waiting. And the next thing I know, there is, well, a big shout out to Bear Robotics. I see one of their Bear Robotics robots coming with my order on it. And then all she needs to do is pick it, put it into my locker. I pop my locker open and I get my food.
Wow.
Right. So, and for me, that's like downtown Chicago. Out the other restaurant that we were talking about, the Japanese one that I was telling you, I'm not sure the name could be the same one. It looks like there are multiple ones that are doing it now. Because you've got to remember that these are tasks that are very repetitive, they're very dull. As human beings are being exposed to more and more knowledge and more information, you start realizing that there's a lot more that you can do with your brain than having the necessity to do physical work. So you are going to start seeing a shortage of having hiring challenges rather in spaces now, which are like restaurants, for example, right? I'm also impressed. So the robots that I sent you was from Poodle Robotics, and I was impressed. I actually got in front of it a couple of times because it's a far more dynamic environment than a warehouse, right? So I did get in front of it a couple of times, and they were able to navigate around me much like our robots do. And I was impressed that like they have that level of dexterity in them.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned to you too. I was just in Austin, Texas, and it's very they have the autonomous Ubers, the cruise cars,
Yes.
where they're rolling that out, and that's commonplace in a couple markets. So, like you said, these jobs where you can use a robot to replace a human being are becoming more and more normal, and you'll see more of that as time goes on.
I wouldn't say replace, right? I think it's a natural progression for me that if this job can be automated for whatever, in whatever way, and that person who is doing their next job can go on to do something better or be able to improve the throughput that you're already having, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's warehousing, right? Like I've only seen cases where people think that, okay, if I put robots into my warehouse, there are going to be those many less people that I might have to hire. True, maybe initially, but given the speed at which things are going to be able to roll out, then you're able to do a lot more business. You're able to do have a lot more people. You might actually hire more people eventually to keep up with the scale. So more than removing the number of people, I think that you're just augmenting workforces these days. Think of it this way. When I join a corporate job, first thing I get is a phone and a laptop, right? So that I'm going to be able to do my job better. Now imagine that the factories and the warehouses of the future are that when somebody joins a new job, they get a robot to work alongside them.
Okay.
It's
So
almost like
just
that. Yeah.
same. Okay.
Think of it like as your new buddy at work. Right. So if I came to work, and in fact, our robots very specifically have a little face on it. And it actually comes from, it has its origins in anime. And it's a little happy face that will like dance around the screen, etc. So I'm not saying that we're trying to humanize it, but we're trying to make it as connected as possible to that you understand this machine understands that, okay, maybe it's time to need, you need a break. Right, or understands it's just a face that's there on the screen. I'm not sure how much it has from a psychological impact on people, but I know for a fact that the very if they are able to we're able to cut down their walking time, we're able to give them less stress on their feet, less stress while working their job. If I'm making somebody's life a little bit better to come to that job to picking inside that warehouse, I'm happy.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, and I remember when I met you and you told me that you were with Reputa Robotics, you said you specifically sought them out because they were like the gold standard, so to speak, in robotics. And they have if I understand right, the number one market share in Japan.
That's right. You have a good memory, Dave. Given that we spoke about this almost 6 months ago, like, wow. Okay. Yeah. Fun story. I happened to discover Rapido on Twitter actually when somebody posted about them. And I was like, how do I not know about this robotics company? I went down a rabbit hole for 2 or 3 hours, obsessing and reading as much as I could about it. And I was like, wow, the tech for me and the founders were the two things that like got me to actually write to them and say, I don't speak Japanese. I've never lived in Tokyo all my life, but I see potential and I see, and when I see this product, I know that you put a lot of effort into it, and it's a great product. And currently, you're just in Japan, but if and when you're ready to take this outside of Japan, I'm there, and I want to be part of that journey. Well, here I am, as you can tell, 2 years later, sitting in the chair and talking about them. I think the founders come with a lot of empathy, both for the employees and for people. I actually went on to even talk to people who had worked at the company before I joined, and they told me like, only the most glowing things about both the founders, about from an engineering perspective, from an empathy perspective. We're not big on marketing, as you can tell, even though my designation says global marketing manager. I think we don't blow our trumpet out a lot, enough. The fact that we're number one in Japan, the fact that we work with some of the biggest 3PLs in the world, we never talk about that. I think we're just constantly focusing on this is what is how we can push the envelope on tech. This is what is currently being done. This is what we should be building. And that is what I liked about them. It was the focus was purely on almost a customer obsession to a certain extent, that I'd like to say that, okay, yes, maybe this is possible in robotics, but is this something that a customer needs? I'll give you a simple example, right? Like being nimble in the way they think. So rather than the way we think, I should say. One of the customers came to us saying that, there might be an emergency inside a warehouse. So, for example, earthquakes or a fire. So our robots know that if an emergency button is hit, that they all need to stop whatever they're doing and go to a secure zone where the shutter comes down and closes. And they have only X amount of time within which they can reach that shutter for it to shut down. And this was a genuine request that the company finally took, and they worked on it. So I love companies that are constantly listening to their customers. I felt it matched my own personal core values of especially the empathy piece of it, because I like to believe I'm a very empathetic person. So I wanted a product that I would be able to then take to market. And that's why I'm so passionate when I talk about them, because I truly believe that this was done with a lot of thought, was built with a lot of input from end customers. And when I mean end customers, there are two kinds: business owners, people who actually own the 3PL, and then the people who are picking on the robots, because they we should not forget, never forget about them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now, being number one in Japan is Japan's considered like the world leader in robots, right? In robotic adoption. So that's like a big deal, to have the number one market share. Now, going outside of Japan to somewhere in the U.S., I was looking up. I think U.S. is like ranked number seven in terms of number
Adoption
of,
of robots.
yeah.
Yeah.
How what is that like coming as basically a startup to a market like the US?
I think with Asia, the trend that I see out, like in Korea, for example, China, Japan, all of these places, is the fact that, like you said, it's just the mindset that's more around the lines of how can I adopt more technology? How can I automate more? And for them, robots, like I said, go beyond just having them in the industrial spaces. You start seeing them in personal spaces inside airports, for example, hotels. I have seen robots inside hotels coming and delivering toiletries up to my room, right? So I've seen rope. Yes, I know. And this was like 2017 in Singapore, when I stayed at a hotel which had my toiletries brought to me by a robot. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Right, so it's not uncommon in Asia to start seeing robots all over, in literally in your everyday life. I think with the United States, the what I've noticed is there is a severe problem or a severe pain point, and that's where then the adoption is of technology is coming in, because there is a pain point. There is actual pain. There is an actual problem. There are actual problems around this, primarily around rising costs of getting people to come and work inside warehouses, for example. The speed at which now products need to be delivered, because people believe in that, okay, I ordered this pair of headphones, or I ordered a watch, or I ordered this. It needs to be delivered like now, if for lack of a better word. I mean, it's impossible. We know that, and we being in the space understand that. So I think that from that perspective, I'm not seeing as many robots the way I see in Japan that are in people's lives or inside their homes, etc., barring the home cleaning robots, etc., those kind of ones. But I think for me, what I've noticed here in the US is it's because there is a pain point, there is a need, and that gap can only be bridged when you have automation coming in. It's no different though. It's exciting to see that there are a lot more players doing different kinds of robotics here. There is a big push I see internally with 3PLs, with even any sort of business owner that understands that, okay, if I really want to advance my operations, I'll have to automate at some point. Having said that, there are certain things that we see or have seen in Japan and that we've built for in Japan. We weren't sure if those were going to be the same pain points, the same gaps that we were going to bridge here in the US. But increasingly, we're noticing that those problems would come in. One is, like I was telling you, space, right? So America is a very big country. It's really, really huge from end to end. Japan is very tiny. We'd probably be the size of a single state in the United States, right? So we have a land crisis in Japan, which so hence everything's now going vertical. And we thought that, okay, that's probably not something we're going to see in the US. But people like yourself who have more experience in the space tell me that we're now slowly getting closer into the cities. Like the warehouses now need to be in more prime areas to cut down that time because customers are impatient. Customers want things at speed. And so to do that, you're going to have to start paying a lot more cost as you get closer into cities. As a result, now you need to save on space. Either you go vertical or you start getting a little more compressed. And that's where our tech comes in. Our tech already is built for operations like these. So I think that while we don't see it as an immediate problem here in the US, we're beginning to see that that's picking up. I mean, I've been here about a year now already, and I can see that some of those conversations are happening very similar to what we're seeing in Japan.
Absolutely. And you were speaking earlier about the out of the box tactics and kind of thinking of the company. Because I remember also, I was really impressed when I met you because we met at Automate in Detroit and
That's
you were
right.
at a booth and like you spotted the 3PL on my name tag and you said, "You have a 3PL. We have these robots and you're talking about we'll bring our robots to your warehouse and film a commercial." And all this stuff. So I mean, talk about, and obviously you being the global marketing manager, I'm assuming that's maybe something you came up with. But just talk about some of these unique tactics and the freedom to kind of have these do these different type of out of the box marketing.
So I can think of a lot of ideas of what I want to do with robots outside the box, but I think like for me, what is also important is that the tech needs to be that good for me to execute some of these out of the box things, right? Like so having the robots, like say when I did it with Universal Robots and have them serve wine to the Princess of Denmark, the robot was that easy to program that we could actually execute something that way. And when I talk about what we do with Reputa as well, I think the robots are pretty easy to program. They're easy to for us to move them around once we have a set space for them to that we can actually just designate. And that's all done in the cloud, right? So we're not using any sort of markers on the floor. It's primarily everything that happens in the cloud because we're uploading that map. I think the fact that tech makes it, if I'm excited about the tech and I see that it's nimble enough, it's easy for me to do something with it, then yes. So far, I haven't done anything too crazy with repeater robots as yet, but we did have our we did do during ProMat, we did like really quick, we did a picking competition where people could come in and pick really fast on our robots, but the speed at which the robots were moving, however narrow the aisles were, no matter how many people were in that little tiny space inside our booth, for me, what really stood out was the fact that the robots were very safe to be around. They found their way around it, no matter, even if there was a congestion, if there was a larger group of people that came into the booth, for example, and were curious to stand and understand more about the robot. The other robots that were running around were actually able to find their way, map their way in real time around people. And so I think that now that I'm, bringing more robots out here to the US, I might actually decide to come up with something a little more innovative. I haven't thought about it, but also, because when we met at Automate and I was talking to you about bringing robots out of the warehouses, for me, that's a great showcase of how easy it is to work with our robots, that I can bring them out to Louisville to your DC that's there, right? And have them run within your racks, your aisles, your totes, your pickers, your products. That's how, you know, I would say how confident I am of the technology that it'll deliver. So with that in mindset, I was hoping that, like, and I know that people like you are looking for Tachyon. I understand that sometimes it's a new space. You wonder, okay, do I, how much change do I need to make to my warehouse? Can you work with an existing operation? So I want to tell my idea of like just ambushing you at Automate was to say, hey, you don't need to give me a greenfield operation. You can give me an existing brownfield operation, and I will find a way to work around that. I will show you how our robots run in real time. They can pick on actual shifts. I don't even need a WMS integration, for example. I can do a simple CSV or FTP file upload, and the robots can run that entire shift based on that.
Wow. Yeah, and that's powerful too, because like you mentioned, that's probably one of the biggest hesitancies from people adopting is like, wow, a robot, how am I gonna get that to work in my existing operation? Because it's not necessarily like a cookie cutter approach. There's a lot of nuances and different parts of the job that are unique that humans are doing. So how can I program a robot to do it?
And without putting enough pressure on IT, right? I think like there's a lot of hesitancy that we've seen from 3PLs because they're like, oh, you know, I got to bring IT in, and then I'll have to bring the WMS team in, and then they'll have to, you know, help with the integration. True, that's if you're doing a full-time integration. If it's just like a simple, we're going to come to your warehouse, we're happy to put our robots onto your floor, we're happy to do a demo, then it's just a simple FTP file upload, right? I also like love meeting IT people when I go to warehouses because I tell them that whatever I'm bringing is tech that is going to make your life simpler, and then they're always like smiling at me and saying, really? And how would you do that, miss? What I try to tell them is that there's a layer, right, that connects, that actually controls the robots. And I'd like to, so it's called Repeater IO. But what it does is it takes away some of that load from IT and WMS. When they need to prioritize the orders, they're the ones who need to sit down and, you know, maybe use walkie-talkies on the floor and then push out orders. Our robots don't need to do that because ours, the layer already optimizes for, okay, I just received an order. Now, what is the priority of this order? Is it something that needs to leave before 4 p.m., before 5 p.m.? It understands that. It understands, okay, these are how many robots are currently in operation. Which one has space for me to put this product onto it? So it takes into account the tote volume, the tote capacity, the size of the SKU, and then which is the robot that can get to that the fastest. So the layer is already optimizing for things that typically WMS or IT people are forced to do. And they don't now have to do that.
Excellent. Excellent. Another thing too, I wanted to ask you about that I saw in your profile that was very impressive. So you were a guest at the G20 summit to speak about robotics this past April, was it?
That is right. Yeah. So proudly, half Indian, and so I'd say that like it was an honor when India was hosting the G20 this year. And so for my contribution in robotics, or just my thought leadership in robotics, I was fortunate enough and humbled enough to be invited to be part of that. It was interesting because the topic was more around robotics and healthcare, being able to see what can be done with hardware and software in the healthcare space. I think that is something that probably in general in the world has been trying a few things. We do see some of these kind of AMRs that you and I were talking about in the restaurant earlier. I'm beginning to see them now in hospitals as well. There's a definite use case for them in hospitals and geriatric care. We see it a lot in Japan as well, and you know, where these robots can actually come in, be able to take care of people, be this dispense like pills or maybe deliver meals, repetitive jobs that can be taken away from our nurses. We're beginning to see a lot of AI coming in with, say, maybe screening for COVID, you know, your lungs, what is the damage? And I'm impressed to see even things like, say, maybe robotic arms that can do now, you know, some of those. I know we're pretty much past the whole COVID phase, or we like to think we're past it. So I don't want to jinx it for now. But you could even go and do testing, like, so at least hand you the swab, you swab your nostrils, you put it back in, and hand it in for testing. So I think the idea was to see what was possible, even exoskeleton, for example, right? So one of the companies that I had over there was an exoskeleton company that made maybe warehouse pickers' lives, the ergonomics much better. just purely by the to take away the repetitive motion of lifting and picking things. So to see governments from all over the world to meet with bodies, unilateral bodies like the World Health Organization, the World Bank, etc., that are taking this very seriously now to see how robotics can start changing the healthcare landscape. I was privileged to be part of that those discussions.
Excellent. Another thing too that I noticed and then I looked up afterwards is like when you're speaking at work, right? And you said, wow, what an honor. You know, I'm speaking to, I forget the number, but it was some of the most powerful people in the industry, and I'm the youngest and I'm the only woman in the room. And then I had me thinking, and I looked up the stats, and the stats in the robotics industry, it's about 5% female and 95% male. So what is it like being such a high achiever and a high performer in an industry where you're like the vast minority?
I think it's been an interesting journey. I've seen different sides of people and their reactions to having a woman in the room talk about robotics. It's I think definitely people do turn and pay attention when I talk, and I think when women open talk about it because they're mostly surprised that women know so much. Sorry, but it's true. But I think I have there's been a great reception. I also see there is a trend now where there are more women coming into the space. We're a small minority, but a bunch of us sometimes just get together, either women in supply chain also, which is quite a small number, if you look up those stats, and then yes, even further smaller when it's women in robotics. It's whenever I meet somebody else or another woman in robotics, I'm always excited because I was like, talk to me, you know, I've been looking for you all this while. But I'm also fortunate to say that I have met very interesting men who've been able to also teach without mansplaining. You know, I work with some of the best engineers in the world. With Universal Robots, I had amazing engineers that I worked with. My entire team were all men for the longest time till I finally got somebody else in the marketing team, and at least out in my squad. And then now again at Reputa, I'm the only woman. I should say I'm well taken care of. They are very protective of me and whenever I'm traveling. They also teach me, they sit down, they explain. I think it's a lot of what I am talking to you today, I have been fortunate enough that I've had very patient colleagues who've taught me and who've held my hand. And the other day when I quickly realized that I'd completed 2 years at Reputa, and it was also Women in Robotics Day, coincidentally on the same day. And I wrote to the founders, I wrote to a lot of the engineers at Reputa directly saying thank you for lifting me up to where I am today. So yes.
Oh, that's a great story. Okay. Now you mentioned travel. You might travel more than anyone I know. How many days a year are you on the road?
It's crazy. My dad called me the other day, and my dad rarely phones me. Like, it's more like me calling them because he's always like, where in the world are you right now? And I spoke to him, and I said, I'm tired. And he said, well, remember what I told you back in the day? Be careful what you wish for. You know, I did have a job where I used to be behind the desk, and it made me fairly unhappy. So while the travel is exhausting, and you know that I do a shuttle not only within the US and like traveling domestically, but I also travel a lot internationally. I think it opens my mind to problems that I get a chance to be in the field, Dave. There is nothing that can replace that. There is no amount of desk research. There is no amount of reading any number of reports that I could, like mull over and try to absorb them and maybe even crunch those numbers compared to the fact that when I stand in the field and I am talking to warehouse owners, I'm talking to manufacturers, there is just so much that you learn, that I learn every single day. And so for me, my travel teaches me two things. It teaches me, on the one hand, how actually similar we all are as humans, you know, apart from the boundaries and the geographical, political issues and all of that, right? You transcend into how we're all the same. Every time I get onto a flight, I'm probably flying with, like, if it's a large international flight, you're with at least 200 people on board. You know, if it's a domestic, you're maybe with like 50, 100 people on board. And we're all the same at the end of the day. And likewise, while I take that principle and I put it out to work, when I go to different warehouses and I meet business owners, I meet actual warehouse pickers and I talk to them, I realize that the problems are actually the same. We all want to be heard, we want to be understood, and we want somebody to take some of the different kinds of like pain points away from us. So my on I make the most of my travel by usually striking up conversations with random people inside flights. I've made some amazing friends all over the world by just sitting through a 17-hour long haul and getting to know somebody. No better way than being trapped in a flying metal tube to get to know somebody. And they can't run anywhere and you can't run anywhere, so you're stuck with them. And I've been fortunate to meet some very interesting people. And then just going to even different parts of the world, like a warehouse in Tokyo, for example, that I know of, gave me the opportunity to see how there was a shift of pickers that they have in the age group of, say, 55 to about 70, right? Beautiful silver-haired people walking around picking on robots, to coming out here to the US and seeing warehouses that are also encouraging more women to come on board and pick and be employed and get all of that. So I think like there's a lot of excitement that I have every time I go to a new place and I get a chance to see a new warehouse or get a chance to interact with a person who might be able to contribute and teach me something at the end of the day.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great perspective too, in terms of what you learn and how we're all at the end of the day, we're a lot more alike than we are different.
I mean, well, you and I are talking here, and we met at a show, right, which brought similar minds like ourselves. You have an appetite for automation. I have a similar appetite. That's how we got talking, and look at where we are today, right? We're sitting here and talking about 6 months later, this, and we've kept in touch. So I think that I've met people who are genuinely passionate about either solving problems, building new tech, exploring new tech, equally empathetic about how there are these global problems that are across, whether you're in Europe, you're in Asia, whether you're in Americas, you're in South America, it doesn't matter, or Africa, it doesn't matter where you are. Some of those problems just remain innately same. Whether it's personal, whether it's professional, I've noticed that I've made some amazing relationships. I've built some amazing relationships in this space just purely through my travel.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right. Just wrapping up. So with Reputa now, what do you have coming up currently and for the rest of this year? What's new on the agenda?
I think right now we're just happy that we've been able to get our first few customers on board. And we're grateful for the customers here in the US that have been able to, put their trust in us, given the fact that we're just establishing our footprint. So while my engineering team is really nice and busy, getting those deployments out, I think my focus for the next few months is going to be just talking about how robotics can impact different areas of the supply chain, right? And we as a company are currently with the single product, but we have been innovating in Japan as well, where we do have an autonomous forklift that is there as the next line of product that we've built. And then we also now have, I think, the world's first flexible ASRS system. So it's much like, think of it as, well, Lego for warehousing. And it's up on our YouTube channel where you can go and just build it without any nuts and bolts and fit it and take it off. Completely dismantle it and pack it up and take it. So I think our focus for the next few months is going to be getting those first few deployments off the ground, making sure that customers here are happy, just as we've had 100% retention out in Japan. So I don't see why that cannot be replicated here in the US. We also run an ROI guarantee program in Japan, which now I'm bringing out to the US, which means we use simulation as a service. Get an idea of what the ROI looks like and then go ahead and guarantee that. So these things for us are techniques that we want to bring to the market. We want to show people what is actually possible with automation. So that's, I think, and it's an exciting next few months. Also, given that peak season is on, we're getting to witness firsthand some of the problems that are happening here. So it'll help us better prepare for what we want to do in terms of helping our customers in a better way or doing something different with our robots.
And that stat too is just mind blowing, right? 100% customer retention. So in the entire life of the company, you've never lost a customer.
No.
I would be shouting that from the rooftops
I know. So I think like that's gonna be my job right now to help Rapida do a little more of that, you know, being vocal and being out there. I mean, we work with the seventh biggest 3PL in the world, and they've had us as our customer for a very, very long time. As a vendor, I mean, they've been our customer for a very long time. The kind of faith and trust that they put in us to be able to execute not only in Japan but also in the United States was a testament for me personally that I was working for the right company, that I did go to the right company and say, "Let me come work for you." Like, you know, sometimes these things, when I hear this from the field, where customers are coming in and saying, "Oh, you know, we love what you've done with us in Japan. Of course, we want you here out in the United States." That moment goes for me. I'm like, yes, I'm with the right set of people.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. And if people have further questions, they want to get in touch with you, they want to know more about your robotic solutions, how can they get in touch with you?
Find us on LinkedIn. I have access to all the LinkedIn messages that come in. Feel free to DM me on LinkedIn. My email address is my first name dot last name at reputa-robotics.com. Just fill up a form on our website or just reach out to anybody in our team. I think people are very open and very open to talking about what we do. But I think the bigger point here is, if you have a problem and you're not sure whether this needs to be automated or not, come talk to us, because it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be our solution. We're the kind of people that just want to understand what a problem is and then figure a way around. If it's not for us to fix and someone else to fix, that's something that we would tell you very openly, and that's something I admire about the company.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for coming on the show. We had a
Dave,
great
thank you for
discussion.
having me. I'm
Yeah.
excited though to see what you're doing with this podcast. I think it's very necessary that there's more and more information being disseminated out. I've heard your previous episode as well. So for me, I've been following all of your posts on LinkedIn, where you have been systematically posting every day key pieces of information that are relevant to people like myself, making my life so much easier by just following you up on LinkedIn. So thank you for that.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right. Well, that's it for the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. And again, thank you, Alicia, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Hello again, Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.